Welcome to this episode of George Takes a Sentimental Ernie, your only podcast for detailed breakdowns of the George Lopez Show, episode by episode. I'm one of your hosts, Kyle Overkill, joined by my other Lopez lover, Tim. How you doing?
I'm doing quite well. Quite well. How are you?
Not too bad. I know we just recorded it doesn't in the way we put out episodes, but we recorded yesterday, so I was like, I used up all my banter yesterday. I got like nothing today. I bought a Megazord, but that's about it. Just a bad choice. So that's good news. Well, I guess bad news. It's like sitting in front of me and it's pissing me off because I can't believe I bought it. But bad news, Tim. We did it again.
This is like the 30th time in a row.
I know. I keep promising you that we're going to do it, but things just keep coming up. We're not going to be able to talk about the episode of George Lopez Show where George still refuses to return home until his mother leaves, but when he realizes how difficult it is to live with Ernie and his parents, he convinces Ernie to get his own place. We actually have like a really awesome episode. We're going to talk about the current Kickstarter for Blood Force Trauma Issue 2. And to do so, I'm really excited. We're joined by the creators, Jake Smith and Hiram Corbett. How you guys doing?
I'm doing good. I think Hiram's gone, but he's going to try to wiggle his way back into the chat. He said he's on his way. I wouldn't stop it. I think we're good. But
we're not going to be able to talk about George Lopez.
I'm kind of pissed off because you said that. I didn't know what you were going to say, and I was super excited about a George Lopez podcast. I would listen to that. That sounds good.
I know. I think at this point, more people would listen to that than a podcast about comic books.
Well, what you do is you trick them, and they come in like I did, where I was like, George Lopez, and then you're like 30 minutes in, and you're like, they're not going to talk about George Lopez.
Like, hang on, guys, it's coming. We got this other guest, but don't worry about it. We'll check in. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Yeah, thanks for having me, and thanks for having Hiram Spirit. If he, you know, when he comes back,
we'll get him. I think one of the most surprising things about the Kickstarter and the book in general is that, or how surprising it is for you guys that nobody had used Blood Force Trauma at all in any. I can't find it. Like, nobody used it. It's like not a movie. It's not like a shitty movie.
Yeah, it's such a good name. Like,
when that name came up, like, you're like, I know. Thank it's you. Fucking awesome.
I'm glad because sometimes, you know, you do a comic and you're like doing it for months and then you think, did I pick the worst name ever? And you're like, I can't change it. I can't go back. So, like, I'm glad you like it. It's kind of. How it came about is when I was a kid, I thought it was blunt force trauma. When people would say that on TV shows, they'd be like, the victim has blunt force trauma. I thought they were saying blood force trauma. And I was like, that sounds cool. But I was wrong. But, you know, but now I make my own comics. I can do what I want. So in my world, that is what it is.
Yeah, blunt doesn't sound as cool. I'm pretty sure there's probably like tons of like blunt force trauma books that are like focused on other stuff. Well, I like Googled it too. I was like, blood force trauma. And it's like, did you mean blunt force? And I'm like, fuck no. Yeah. Get out of here, Google.
Like, no, never. Google behind the times.
That's the fuck. Yeah, blunt force trauma is my marijuana themed action comic that I'm gonna work on next.
You should do that. I would read that. It'd be cool. We can do a crossover.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a vape shop somewhere named.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, those vape shops are. Like the best. There's like, so I brought this up numerous times on the cast. So I always hate repeating it, but I know people are new to listening. Sometimes on weekends for extra money, I work at Barnes and Noble, and there's a section called Cozy Mysteries, and it's like at the start of Mysteries. It's the like best fucking books. It's like all like pun title like mystery books, like
oh nice, you
know, Claws of I don't know. I can't think of any more. But we got Hiram back.
I think Hiram's back. I think he heard you say Cozy Mysteries, and yeah. That always brings Hiram back. Lord Hiram, back is there. That you? Hiram? He's... Oh, no. He's... Man, this is hilarious. He'll get it. It's fine. I like that they have such specific genres that you can find in Barnes & Noble, like a Netflix queue, how it's so specific now. because everyone's in such a mood. They're like, well, I want a romantic rom-com road trip movie. You know what I mean? And you're like, that's a genre you can find at Barnes & Noble now.
Oh, yeah. We got, like, they have tables for... Because if you go in that store, it's just, like, literally shelves, and then every 2 feet you walk, you run into a fucking table that's, like, hip high. But they have, like, tables for everything. Like, oh, you like... sci-fi with love and I don't know, zombies. Like, we got a table over here, you can read it.
Sci-fi with love? I mean, I love sci-fi with love. So, you like the George Lopez encyclopedia? We've got that.
We got no Lopez books.
That's because we're going to write the first one.
You got to bring
that in. Yeah, that's true. It'll be like those old... I used to love... That was, like, my favorite thing as a kid, getting those, like, Simpsons episode guide books.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Those things are fucking great. Yeah, we'll just make one for the George Lopez show.
You should, but then when you get past the first chapter, it's not... It's about comics again. And you tricked him.
So, I think... I mean, you got some love. You got love of fighting, but I guess the sci-fi love story is Blood Force Trauma. What is... I know I hate asking that question because it's such like a cheap...
Where do your ideas question, come from?
Again, with the Kickstarter going.
Yeah. Oh, where do they come from?
Write books.
So the thing that's fun about this is me and Hiram, with this book, we came up with the idea... a few years ago, and it used to be a different idea, and then we kind of got into fighting games together, and we were like, what if we make it a fighting comic? And it's like, it feels like the campaign in a good fighting game, because, like, you know, other than like Mortal Kombat, which has a pretty good campaign, most like Street Fighter or whatever, they're like you cannot follow the story of those games at all. It's like, it's crazy. So we were like, it'd be fun to make, like, it's a comic, but it's our version of what we would do if we could make a good campaign mode in a video game. And then it kind of just sprung off of that. Like, we want cool training montages, you know. It's very 80s in homage to the 80s. So we've got, like, the cliche 80s training montage that happens in this issue, which we're excited about. And we also, me and Hiram, I wish he was on here, he could tell you about it. He showed me this movie. Called Black Dynamite. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we love Jim Kelly, blaxploitation, kung fu movies like that. So we were like, the original idea was Lightning Legs, who is the main character of this issue, was the main character at one point. And then we came up with the fighting game angle, and we were like, oh, we need a weak character to be the main character so he can learn. And Lightning Legs will be his mentor, because we had to stick him in there somewhere because we love that stuff. So it's kind of organic. We just start goofing around, kind of like you guys do, like on the podcast, just like shooting the shit, you know, like coming up with crazy ideas and trying to one-up each other. And then it kind of springboards from there. And then with this comic, what's cool about Kickstarter is I can do anything I want. So like this comic, we were literally like, I'm tired of, because I've been doing freelance work and they've been telling me what to do, and that's cool, but I was like, let's make exactly what we want to make, and this is what we want to make. So I don't think that answered your question at all, but it was fun to say all that.
No, and I think it does too, because these type of books, which are probably my favorite type of comics, where like wholly embracing the medium and like fun for fun's sake, like,
oh yeah,
I mean, I love the, like, you know, the Hickmans and the Alan Moore. Like, that shit's fun to do. But at the same time, like, I love sitting down. One thing we've been talking about recently is, like, Prison Pit, which is, like, one of my favorite books, because it's just, like, you know, five volumes of, like, people fucking faces and, like, weird, like, shit. Like, and this is fun, but I think there is a science or a nuance to, like, balancing the absurdity. Like, I think there's, like, a level of that and being able to kind of court that into humor and still be like a coherent and fun comic book. And like one of my favorite comics is have you read The Auteur?
I think so. I don't think I've read it, but I've heard of it.
Yes, and it's like this like weird wacky story about like an auteur filmmaker, and he makes this like book, and he hires like an actual murderer as his like villain, and he kills, but like it's
nice,
it's able to like keep that contained. And I think you guys do that perfectly. Like, it's fun and it's absurd and, like, it works to the humor, but at the same time, like, it's, like, filtered through this, like, story, and it works. I mean, is that something having Hiram and you kind of be able to soundboard off each other, is able to, like, condense it into this, like pages of awesomeness, is words I got.
Well, thank you for your kind words, by the way. I like when people read it and they actually like it, so that's cool. So Hiram's really good at, since he's not here, he doesn't like when I compliment him. So now that he's not here, I can compliment the shit out of him and he can't do anything about it. So he's really good at big picture, like overall. Like, I don't feel like I'm super good at doing outlines and like long form story and how one event goes into the next. I'm really good at, like, when I'm doing the art, like action to action, what directly happens. So like Hiram helps me with the overall story and what the character motivations are and all that kind of stuff. And then I do the fun, over the top violence, fight scenes, the moment to moment action and dialogue and all that. And then, so bouncing off with Hiram's been great because I can have a problem in the story and be like, how does he get from this point to this point? And he can fix it in 2 seconds and be like, it's obvious. You give him a power glove or whatever, you know, some shit. And I'm like, that's amazing. And then he can fix it. And it always elevates it. And I love what you said about you love the Alan Moores, you love all that kind of stuff. I'm the same way, where I love to sit down and read a brainy, well thought out, poignant comic and like be touched. But then I also like to read some, you know, I like to call it like bargain bin comics, where it's like you go through like a dollar bin of comics and find that treasure and be like, whoa, what is this, cyborg monkeys or something, you know? And you're like, I'm gonna take this home, and and that's the kind of stuff that when you're a kid you find it and it gets you into it. So like this comic, we wanted to make it for that like weird 12-year-old who goes to the comic store and finds it, and he's not really allowed to read it, but it like sparks something in him, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And does that help, and I'll be able to
hello.
This to Hiram as well, who's joined us. How you doing?
Sorry, I finally reached you guys. I'm so sorry for the hang-up.
you're good, fine. Man. I was just talking about how great you were, so it's all good.
It's been a heavy blast. Yeah, missed all the positive stuff. Now we're just going to talk about how he doesn't like working on the book for you.
Yeah, he just said, what are the good things about Hiram and the bad things? I just finished the good things, and man, you're in for a treat.
Man, I'm in for it, man. Like, you guys should like drag my name right now. It took me up to 3 different devices to get this to actually work. So sorry, I'm very flustered right now. So please, take your time. You can berate me all you want.
No, man, that's the smart thing. You're building up the suspense. Now people are like, oh, fuck, man, Hiram's here. He's going to be dropping some shit.
He better be awesome.
And so, yeah, we were talking about, like, I said, I think you guys nail, like, the balance and the, like, infusion of humor and absurdity, but while it's still being, like, coherent, like, well-paced and just, like, a fun book to read. Like, I think you could easily go, like, over into one end where, like, I don't even, like, sometimes, like, I'm trying to, like, because I know the fans are, like, Rick and Morty, like, sometimes where it's, like, over, I'm like, okay, I get it, or, like, family, like, there's a balance to any of that, and I think you guys do it perfectly. And Jake was commenting about, like, how great you are at kind of getting that in while he does the art. Is that something,
so nice.
As you guys as a team, like, I know, like, coming off, like, something like this is Offbeat Town, where Jake, you were doing all that, like, being able to focus kind of on the art gives, like, Hiram, you, like, the ability to kind of focus on, again, the aspects of making it a coherent and, like, building out this. Because one of the interesting things, too, is the world building. You guys have, like, this insane world that you could drop everybody into. Like, does that give you, Jake, the ability to focus on the art and Hiram, like, focus on the things that, and then you guys come together kind of on the bigger plot points?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that, I think for me at least, like, when Jake, like, came up with this idea and, like, told me about it, like, you know, he kind of mixed the grunginess of, like, this offbeat town, like, with, like, my love of 80s stuff. And, like, the idea to bring this universe, or like this universe comprised of mixed universes, like makes it a whole sandbox, like where essentially anything is possible. And it's, I think, like the further we get into each issue, the further we get into each different arcs, the more wacky it's gonna get. And that's always something that we plan on from the start. And I think that Jake and I are very excited about that. Especially Jake, because he's doing the art, of course.
Oh, yeah. And, like, this Offbeat Town was fun. But I look back, you know, you always look back at what you did, and you're like, I could have done that better. So I look at that book, and I go, that was just me gearing up to artistically to get to do a book like this. Like, that was, like, I wrote this story around all this stuff I wanted to draw. And then this book, I'm like, I want to get Hiram on board because he's a good storyteller, and I want to make sure that the story and the characters are fun and compelling, and then I can go, you know, as crazy as I want to with the artwork. And Hiram, he kills it.
So how crazy did you want to get with the artwork?
So we've got, like, here's the thing. If I had it up to me, we would, like, do everything right away that we want to do, like how characters, what they become later in the story, like how crazy it gets. But I like shows like Breaking Bad where it seems crazy, and then when you go back and watch it from the beginning, you're like, oh, this isn't even close to how crazy it gets later. You know, the buildup is important. So Hiram's good at helping me reel back also, because he's like, well, story-wise, we don't want him to, like, go like Zap to become ultra superpowered, ultra instinct Goku, like right away. You know, you want him to like build up to that. So,
those 10 episodes of him screaming.
Yeah. Like, shit, which I would love to draw that. Just drawing dudes screaming. That's the best. And rocks floating around them.
It's always, that's always the best. Like, it always intensifies every single fight. Even like, especially like when they go from episode to episode, building up how much he's becoming super rare, and they don't even do anything.
Yeah, they're just standing there, and everyone around them is like, "He's so godlike." He hasn't done anything in like 10 episodes. Yeah.
Well, that's like the crazy thing is, like, I went through and I bought, like, maybe last year they came out with like the Dragon Ball Z, like I don't know, for whatever reason, manga, like they sell like those box sets and like the huge boxes with the, like, handles. Like, I'm going to fucking walk around with that thing.
But, yeah, like a lunchbox.
Yeah, but it's awesome. And it's, like, I don't know how many volumes in it. But, like, I'm reading it, and I've been reading it with, like, my 7-year-old son, too. And, like, it's...
Oh, nice.
It's, like, it's cool, and it looks fucking awesome. But, like, it's nowhere, like, near as exciting as I remember it. Because I'm not waiting a week watching Toonami for, like, the next, like, build-up fight where, like... You can read, like, the whole Frieza saga in one book. And you're like, well, that was, like, not as impressive.
No, yeah, I went through and just watched all of it, like, last year again. And I was, like, and I had it on while I'm drawing, so it feels like it goes by really fast. And I'm literally, like, it's been 35 episodes and he hasn't beaten Frieza yet. See, I'm kind of the opposite where I'm like, beat him already, jeez. Like, come on. It's taking too long.
Like, just skip, like, just get to it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's when he's, you just, like, go to Wikipedia, like, which episode is he punch him?
Does he finally get to it? And then he's like, this isn't even my final form, you idiot. And I'm like, just start with your final form, weirdo. And you know, doing it.
You know what's funny about that, like, that specific series is the fact that, like, it's one of those popular animes like One Piece or like Naruto that always goes deep into the lore and, like, really, really deep, like, and, like, to the point of where it becomes a science, like, oh my gosh, this person's chi levels is off the chart. And
dude, we gotta have that in our comic, dude.
The fact that we can have that, like, sort of, we can, like, kind of poke fun at that with our comic. And
That's a good idea. I didn't even think about that. Like, fighters' power levels, like, in that, we could come up with some fake statistic that people throw around and be like,
oh my gosh, like, Zap reaches new coaxial.
That's true. Dude, that's awesome.
Well, I think
we're just giving away ideas.
Well, because Zap has the, like, I think there's the one part where he's looking at him, he can, like, read his, like, skill set. So, I mean, you have it built in, so you...
Oh, yeah. So, like, his visor, he's an ultra nerd for the show. Like, he has all the stats in his visor so he can, like, pop them up while he's watching. And that becomes a big thing in the series. So I'm glad you picked up on that. That's cool.
So issue 6, we'll see someone yell over 9,000.
Dude, Definitely.
You never know, man. You never know what we can throw in there.
Yeah. All the hints. I have, like, in the graffiti. If you look in the comic, too, in the graffiti in the background, I'm always, like, writing random fighting games, like, and anime that I like that's kind of influenced. Like, we have, like, Guilty Gear written in the back and Street Fighter and stuff and all the posters. In the next issue, I'm excited because this issue is very, like, set the stage, thrash and meat grinder fight. You know what's going on. It's all about the show. The next issue is very, like, Zap goes home. He's hanging out with Lightning Legs. It's, like, more character, and then you all the posters in Zap's apartment are like all these this anime and fighting games that I like, and it's just we're just making a love letter to like all the nerdy crap that we like, you know.
It's, I mean, you guys are doing this Kickstarter and you're successful for the first one, you're already successful for the second one, and this point just like kind of racking up like points.
Yeah.
What was the idea of doing it kind of issue? Because I know you have covers for more, and it's clear you guys have, like, an idea for, like, down the road and stuff like that. So is it just for, obviously, like, printing purposes, or is it for, like, kind of focusing it yourself issue to issue? Is that kind of the focus for you guys, at least just kind of getting the best issues each time, or is it, like, a strictly, like, printing and making your own comics is fucking a pain in the ass and like a lot of work and money.
Yeah, I mean it's both of those things. It's so I did my Kickstarter for Offbeat Town out of basically I was about to give up on comics because I was, you know, at a low point in my life, and I was like, well, I want to do comics, but I don't know if I can make it, and I've been like trying, and so I just threw it up on Kickstarter hoping like if it funds and I'll make it, and if it doesn't, I'll just like do something else. And it funded really fast and it did really well, and I was super excited. And then the next three issues I did it as a batch of issues, because I felt like I was like pestering people on Kickstarter being like back my book. So I lumped it all together to be like just one and we're done. You don't have to give me any more money. And then when I did this Kickstarter, I got a lot of positive feedback that was like fans of the book were like, when's the next one? I want the next one. And I was like, oh, if people want the book, then they'll give to the Kickstarter. It's not like me being like, please, like they're getting stuff in return and people like it. So I think, it's basically just to print it and ship it, and whatever extra we make like helps us live basically, you know. So for this Kickstarter, we funded so we can print it and ship it, and then whatever we make on top would be great, just because if people keep we want more fans and we want more people to read it, and we want all that free stuff. So like if we make it to 5,000, that's our next stretch goal. Everyone gets a free pack of like custom stickers, and then at one point we're gonna do like patches, hopefully, if it get, and then I have all these DJs lined up to do music for a soundtrack if we made enough money, but it'd be cool to get that far, but maybe not on this one, maybe in the future.
Yeah, how far, I mean, is this something, I know even like in there you have like issue like 12 cover, is this something like you guys have set, like, I mean it obviously seems like it's like as friends just something like fucking fun to write and like hang out and do that. Is that something like you guys would just be doing at this point if people continue to back it and come to it like for the foreseeable future, something you guys want to keep doing?
It's kind of, I would keep doing it. We are talking to publishers right now. I can't really say anything about it until the deal is gone through, but we're talking to a couple publishers about maybe doing something, and so the idea would be get it out there, people see it, if publishers want it we'll go through them, and then if they don't, fuck it, we'll just kickstart it, you know what I mean? So like hopefully something comes about that, but if not, we're fine, we'll keep kickstarting it. There becomes a thing about Kickstarter books though, about the legitimacy, where it's almost like people have a different mindset behind Kickstarter books, if you guys know what I mean or have thought about that. But it's like a book that comes out through a big publisher, it's got like that street cred, and then like a Kickstarter book, to me, because I make them, I love Kickstarter books because that's where you get some of the rawest, most imaginary imaginative books that you can find. Like, you, I think you guys did an interview with Tyrell.
Yeah.
Yeah, for Eris.
Yeah, that book's dope, dude. You couldn't get that anywhere else. Like, yeah. It needed to be, like, to be kickstarted, and hopefully a publisher sees how cool it is and the potential. But that's kind of just how I feel, I guess.
Yeah, well, I imagine, too, it's still... And it's weird because I think you're in this, like, everyone's in this kind of, like, comic bubble where, like, you know, obviously we do a comic book podcast, so both me and Tim do, like, media for sites, so, like, I'm like, oh, yeah, well, everyone knows about, like, this Kickstarter comic book because it's fucking awesome and it has this person, like, attached, and, like, why wouldn't people, like, love it and be obsessed with it? But then, like, you have to, like, picture the person who just goes to the comic book shop and picks up stuff, and, like, that's just not available to them.
Yeah.
Like, unless, like, that specific shop is going to, like, back a retail, like, tier or something like that. So, like, it's like that. I think we're seeing more of that, especially with the shutdown for a bit. Is like,
oh, yeah.
Getting like cool, and that's like the struggle, is like getting cool fucking comics into people's hands is really difficult just because it's not necessarily like set up for it, and you know, a lot of it falls on like you guys promoting your own stuff, which like, again, it's an industry that kind of relies on that, so like just finding avenues for people to get things, which Kickstarter's been nice. Like, I've gotten like so many fucking books I love, and then you look at books like, you know, Headlopper, which came out of Kickstarter.
Oh yeah,
and that was like one of like the biggest Image books out there.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, see, like that, it's almost like Kickstarter's good for proof of concept for publishers to be like, oh, something we never would have thought would sell, it actually, people do want this, which I like.
That's what I would hope would happen. I mean, I'm not really comic book savvy, so like to do this and to learn how comic books work and how they're made is like a really tremendous learning experience. Like with every step, you know.
Yeah, Hiram comes from a filmmaking and animation background. We came up with these ideas because he's a good writer just generally, and I was like, dude, you'd be really good at writing comics because the beauty of comics is that you can kind of do whatever you want without budgetary restrictions. You just have to have a good artist, and that's what I like about it.
Yeah, like just getting the idea out there, like, you know, just like spiel any wacky idea that might be cool, it's or special to do that you might like that I like to have a story with, and it's really fun to like pitch a story to an artist.
And yeah, we don't have to pay for the CGI to make a giant shark man. We can just draw the shark man.
Exactly.
Does that? I think I've seen this a lot where I think animation is one of the ones that translates well because you have to have that understanding, or a lot of times that 2D understanding of what's going to work, not only story-wise, but also kind of visually in the storytelling aspect. And for a comic kind of built on, you know, the selling point of like sick-ass fights, like the first two in this book in issue one are great. Is that something, again, kind of pulling from that type of background, the art background, but then also kind of like your shared love of, like, I was watching you guys stream, was it Street Fighter at one point?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, that kind of, like, because, again, making, you can obviously have two people fight in comic books, and you can have Superman throw a punch at it, but if you can't sell, like, the location, the like, the actual movement and, like, placement of people in the scenes, like, it just looks like, you know, two sticks fighting each other, whereas like kind of being able to sell that movement is, again, something in animation is so key. I mean, is that something kind of your shared backgrounds and also shared interests really work into, like, creating these like dynamic fight scenes?
Hiram, I think Hiram, you always tell me that you imagine it as a cartoon when we're writing it.
I do, like, I still do, like, every time I like imagine, like. And this is why I love, like, how Jake draws each panel, because it's, like, it's very, you feel, it feels very kinetic as, like, you know, the Shark Man meat grinder, like, runs up to the screen saying, "What a day!" You know? Like, I imagine every fight sequence like the cartoons that I've watched, the anime that I've watched, a lot of martial arts movies that I've watched, and, you know, obviously action films and stuff like that. Primarily a lot from video games, like a lot from fighting games. That's just kind of where I pull a lot of, like, Like, I get it from that, like, a whole lot.
And it's like, it's almost like we pull for, like, the big thing for me reading good action comics is how one motion leads into the next. So, like, we pull a lot from manga, especially. Like, they are the masters of kinetic, fun fight scenes where the fight is the story, which is a big deal. Like, I feel like a lot of American comics, the fight isn't the story. The fight is, like, we talk for a little bit, and then there's two pages of them fighting, and then we're back to what the story is, where in our book, I want characters to be talking and things to be told as the story is as the fight is going. And I think me and Hiram like that aspect of it, that the fight is the thing driving the narrative.
Absolutely. Like, yeah. There's not much else I can say to that, but I'm like, yeah, I agree. Like, I think that's, like, how we can affect, and that's how we, I don't know, I feel like that's how we stick out.
Yeah, well, I if love we do. That first issue, that the big fight is, like, essentially a walkthrough, like, talking, explaining it as, like, this, like, action is going on, which, again, like, at that point, you guys are layering it with, like, story and exposition, and then admits, like, a well-choreographed fight as well.
Thank you. Yeah, those fights are hard, and it's always every project I'm trying to do is something I want to work on. So, like, in Offbeat Town, it was a lot of gunfights, and then there wasn't much hand-to-hand combat that I was drawing, and the ones that I did draw, I did not like at all. So I was like, I'll just make a whole book about fighting. I met Trad Moore in college a few years ago, and he told me that he took the ghostwriter job because he was terrible at drawing cars, and he was like, I've got to learn, so I'll take that ghostwriter job drawing cars, and that's all he drew. And I was like, well, that's a good way to do it. You kind of learn on the job. And I was like, oh, I'm going to write stories that have things in it I'm bad at drawing, and then I'll have to get good.
Then you looked at his drawing hands.
Yeah, at Trad's drawing hand with his big welt. Oh, no, he's a monster. He's crazy. He did a cover for Offbeat Town that I have, and it's my most prized possession. Like, I like that one pinup more than the whole series. Like, I'm like, well, it was worth it to get this.
He was my very first interview ever. I think they were just about to, like, drop Luther Strode 1.
Oh, nice. Wow.
He was showing me stuff, and in the midst of the conversation, he meant that he was, like, about to graduate. I was like, what? How fucking old are you? Like,
oh, yeah, dude. Just, he's crazy.
This is fucking insane.
I don't even think he's 30 yet. He's insane.
Yeah. Well, his and then, like, your... I mean, like, sometimes looking at art, it's just like, how long would it take me to draw this? This looks too much. Like, I'm... Yeah. Like, I'm looking at the... where he gets... Shark gets cut in half, and...
Oh, yeah.
Like, I wouldn't want to draw that brain. That's so much.
That's why I wrote the whole book around that. I gotta draw that gutted brain.
For you guys doing the Kickstarter, how, having kind of done successful ones, and again, I mean, you guys are doing a successful one as that, but is this in and itself its own process? Again, like, I think that's the weirdest thing about comics, or not, maybe not weird, but, like, you have to do all this work to create it. You guys got to write it, you guys draw it, like, do all that. And then you have to go out and, like, this whole other beast of creating a Kickstarter, running it, shipping books, something. Like, at this point, with this one, do you feel, like, more comfortable or better at the process? And, like, what have you learned going into this second one? You guys still did a video, which, good on you.
Yeah, no, that's a good question, because the first, it's so much... like, different. Like, Hiram does, he did the Kickstarter video the first time, and then I did this video just because there was a time, like, constraint, so I had to do it. Hiram's the video guy, so usually I get him to do it, but this time I made the video. And it's so weird from the first Kickstarter for Offbeat Town to this, because back then I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have any, like, friends in comics yet who had done Kickstarters. Like, since then I've met, like, Ryan Brown, who does them all the time, and he's, like, giving me some tips and stuff. But my first one was a very big learning experience. I didn't have, like, an international shipping option, like it was literally just the base level and there was no shipping. And so all these people from all over the world got cheap $10 books, and I was like, oh my god, like I made no money on that first Kickstarter because I got fucked by international shipping. And then the second one went smoother. I have it on there, and then all the surveys were nicer and cleaner. So like by this time it's kind of streamlined. The first issue went real smooth. It's the smoothest one I've done. It didn't take much back and forth between people, so you know, it's a lot better. And I like making them. Like, this Kickstarter is fun because I like how it looks when you're scrolling through, and I take a lot of time to make sure that it's almost like the Kickstarter is a place I want people to hang out. Like, they go in there and they just look at all the art and they're like, whoa, cool, I'll watch the video. And I want the video to feel like it's, I want everything to fit into this aesthetic we've created of that, like, grungy VHS, like, 80s video game style. And I want, you know, and so it's fun. And, yeah, I don't know. I digress.
What is the, I've paused numerous times. What is the actual VHS you put in?
Oh, like, what it's, like, what the cover's printed on?
What's the actual tape?
Oh, I hoped no one would even notice. It's the Swamp Thing movie. Oh. Return of the Swamp Thing.
Return of the Swamp Thing. That's what it was. You told me.
Yeah, and you can barely, you can almost see it. And I try to cover it up, and I was like, no one will look that close.
I tried. I didn't get it. Could have lied. I think. The other thing you do extremely well in this, and like I said, the whole point of this is, like, obviously people go back to this, like, it's fucking great, and
well,
I just
want
more and more of it.
We
talk about the absurdity, the action, and again, something me and Tim are big on is, like, getting humor and horror right in comics, because I think those are, like, two of the most difficult things, because they're...
Oh, yeah.
Just, you know, there's so much based on pacing and kind of readers having control when you, like, other mediums, I think the creators have more. How are you guys approaching that in the series? Is it just what works makes you guys laugh, or is there, like, a kind of science? I think one of my favorite, I think it's in the previews of issue 2, it's where he, like, Furious blinding lightning kicks, and then you just get the wow with the thumbs up, and, like, it's very subtle, but, like,
I think if I'm allowed to answer this, I think it's a little bit of both.
I'll have to ask Joel first, but
yeah. Oh, sorry, RJ, you go ahead.
No, Hiram, you go. What? He's just joking.
No. I think it's a thing of, like, it's a thing of both. It's like a thing where, like, it progresses the story and, like, world building, but also it's like it makes us laugh because, you know, it's a thing we don't, and hopefully nobody will, like, take really seriously, you know. So it's like the preview of the second issue is like I heard Wim Fate and his Kung Fu Mastery. It's like stuff like that, like little, like, one-liners that Jake geniusly puts in that, like, we both really laugh at, but at the same time it's like, oh my gosh, that's really cool, you know. It's insanity. It's zany, and it is
hard to do in comics too. Like, cause you're reading it, so you kind of, like, when you're watching a movie and people are saying the jokes, there it's the inflection and it's the timing, like you said. So you laugh, and it's hard to read something and laugh at it because you're reading it in your own head, and you could read it seriously. So it's almost like the scenario in the story of a comic has to juxtapose with the dialogue. So, like, this guy's murdering the guy, and they're like, we came up with the idea, like, early on in the first issue, they're like, we're like, what if they're trash talking each other, and Thrash is not very good at trash talking, and the first thing Hiram ever came up with for Meat Grinder when he was pitching the character to me, and he was like, what if he's a shark man, and he says, I'm gonna bite you, and then I'm gonna bite your whole family. And I was like, that's amazing, we gotta put that in there. And then I was like, what if Thrash is bad at trash talking, and he comes back with, hey, I will never have a family, I'm infertile, gotcha. And I'm like, that's not good.
Oh, and it kind of just... The Rhonda is...
Yeah, there is bitch ex-wife Rhonda.
That's... Which, it's even funnier, because, like, Like my girlfriend's mom is named Rhonda, and that was like after the fact.
Oh yeah, that was later. You were like, oh no, and your girlfriend's favorite character is Meat Grinder.
Yeah, exactly. She's doing art of him like right now.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, and then we had the idea for the announcer who's like getting more and more excited, and later in the series he's gonna get so excited he like passes out, and then the next issue he's got like an IV bag because he had to go to the hospital because he was too excited. we just got our ideas just kind of like, what if it's like this, and then we get more and more into it, and it's kind of, but the thing is that's interesting about this book is you could read it and not get that it's funny and still enjoy it. I feel like you, if as long you know the story's still there, so like even if you don't get that we're not trying to be serious, which I don't know how you wouldn't get it, but you can still enjoy it just as the story alone. So I feel like with comics at least, the story is the king, and if you know, I don't know, like, I don't know if there's a science to it.
I feel like if the story doesn't grasp them, which I hope it does, people are definitely pulled in by the aesthetic of it for sure.
Oh yeah, that's the thing that's great about comics on Kickstarter is like it's hard to be like, this movie's gonna be great, trust me. Like the comic is basically like, here's what it looks like, here's some pages. If you like this, you're gonna like the whole thing. That's why Kickstarter is so good for comics.
Yeah,
and I think that's one thing that's over the years of Kickstarter that has kind of been figured out for comics. I think early on there was a lot of the comics which were like, I have this great idea, give me some money and I'll make a book, and there's like nothing on the page about like
what they are.
Like, and I think people slowly, and I mean you mentioned Ryan Brown, he's like was like one of the first and kind of like, make the book, have the book ready, and you're just paying for me to print it and get it out there to you, and like
it's, yeah,
it leaves some of the like stress of it, but also again like you said, like it's a like a proven like, here's what it is, if you like it, like you'll like the rest of it, and like then people know, as opposed to like, I have a funny idea, you'll love it.
Yeah, my favorite campaigns, I did this on my very first Kickstarter because I was really nervous, so it was like I felt bad because I was like, this doesn't look good, there's not enough stuff, and I went to the bottom of the barrel on Kickstarter comic projects and just tried to make myself feel better, because there are straight up like some campaigns that are like two paragraphs, a drawing of a head, and they want $50,000. And I'm like, what is this? You guys are crazy. And that would just, I don't know, there's something, I have a weird, like, I guess it's not very nice, but I will go to the bot and just like go through as many like weird Kickstarters that by obscure like people with no information, and it just makes me laugh for some reason, because I'm like, what, how do you expect someone to buy this if you don't have art? So like on mine I try to pack in as much as I can, which might also not be good. Like I've also heard from other people to keep it like straightforward and have enough content but not too much where they're overwhelmed. But on our, if you go on our Kickstarter, like I threw up everything we have basically except the whole second issue, just because that's what I want to see. I want people to see the future issues and be like, oh, they have a plan, because like Offbeat Town was always only going to be like 3 or 4 issues, and people would be like, at shows they would come up to me and want to buy it and be like, I don't know if I want to start this because I like long series and I want to like feel like it's worth my time to get into it. And so I was like, well, this one we've got tons of stories planned, so here's all the covers, and you guys are in for a, like, I want people to get invested like you would in a manga that keeps going and you stick with a few characters and you learn and grow with them. And I feel like those are my favorite types of stories anyway.
I think that's the right, I think the best, absolutely, model. Or you just need to have nude covers. I think those sell really well.
Oh, they do. Sorry. Yeah, no, that's always the funniest too, is when I look up campaigns like that and the ones that make tons, and it's always like the, you know, the anime ladies with the big boobs, and I love that. Like, I'm not gonna like knock anyone for giving that money. I'm like, I would give that money. Come on.
I'd shell out. I'd splurge. Why not?
Yeah, man. If they came with pillows as an incentive.
Exactly.
For, I mean, anyone that's has read issue one, or you guys have the Smartly, which I've seen some not, you have the option, obviously, to back it and get one and two. What can people expect from issue two?
Issue two basically picks up the second issue one leaves off, where Zap's outside of the stadium and he's being mugged by these guys who are mad because they bet all this money on Thrash to win, and now Zap's won, and so they're about to beat him up. Lightning Leg swoops in, and you can see the preview on the Kickstarter page. So the first five pages, he just starts whooping these guys' asses. So we're trying to show you, like, this guy's the king. Like, he's the best at hand-to-hand combat. He's gonna take Zap under his wing, and he's gonna show him how to stand up to these guys. So second issue, basically that. Lightning Legs is gonna teach Zap, and some stuff's gonna happen, and you're gonna get more into what Lightning Legs' whole story is, why he's even helping Zap in the first place, and like stuff like that.
And it's great because I think Lightning Legs, I don't know if you said this, Jake, before I was able to go on, but like Lightning Legs is like one of our, if not our favorite character to have worked on, you know, because he's been around before, since before Blood Force Trauma was even a thing, you know.
Oh yeah, so, I told them we had a book that we were doing, and then we kind of turned it into this book, and then we were like, because I told them that you showed me Black Dynamite, and we love that movie, and I told them how Lightning Legs is like an homage to Jim Kelly and Black Dynamite, like blaxploitation, yeah. Kung Fu, and that's what our character is, and we needed to have him in here, and so far he's our favorite character, I feel like. At least he's mine. He's one of the most fun to write. I love writing his dialogue.
Yeah, writing his dialogue is fantastic, and like the fact that, you know, like the way we envision his character is like vastly different, despite the fact that he looks very similar to like the 1970s blaxploitation, but like as a character, he's a lot more different. And like I think when you like read issues 2 and 3, you'll find out things about him that you would not expect.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. I'm so excited. Hiram knows exactly. Like every time I get to a certain point in the story and I've drawn it, like now it's real, I'll send it to him and be like, "Look, I've drawn it. It's real now." And there's like things about Lightning Legs you find out that I'm so excited about people to see, and hopefully they dig it.
Luckily, in the preview pages you guys post, you have what happens to Meat Grinder, because I would love, like, he's my favorite character going into it. I'm like, oh, I can't wait to read more about this guy.
We were just on stream talking about that, because everyone on our stream that we were doing was like, thanks for doing that to Meat Grinder. He's our favorite character. And I was like, because we had everyone do pinups, and we were like, hey, just do whatever character you want. And everyone's was Meat Grinder. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, we kill him like right away. I was like, if I felt bad. Because he's supposed to literally just be the guy that shows you how badass Thrash is. Like, we were like, how do we have him like just kill a guy? You know, like when a Spider-Man issue opens and Spider-Man beats up the Rhino, and that's just how the story opens. We were like, Thrash just opens with this guy, and he used to be like a normal dude, and then we were like, it'd be cool if he was a shark man, but then we forget people love shark men. like street sharks. We were like, it's gonna be street sharks. And then everyone started doing fan art of him, and I was like, oh damn it.
Yeah, I know. I thought about street sharks when we were creating him in Barnes and Noble, Jake.
And oh yeah, it all happens in Barnes and Noble, Kyle.
Yeah, it did. I thought about Street Sharks, but I also thought about how he sounded like in my head from Bruce from Finding Nemo.
Oh yeah,
that was kind of like.
And he's like, Bruce, what does he say? Fish are friends.
I never knew my father.
You just watched. For like the millionth time, watch Moana yesterday.
Oh, nice!
At one point, he turns into like a half man, half shark.
Oh yeah, yeah! Oh, I forgot about that.
Oh shark yeah, head. Maui. Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah, that's good. Movie. Yeah. Well, I mean, luckily, originally, you guys are kind of in a world where like you could easily like bring him back. I mean, you should do that. Tier, oh, shush! Like, $10,000.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, shush. We have. We have so many plans. Like, weird.
We're under contract. We can't say anything about
that. Yeah. We can't say anything. Even though I want to. Because, like, we make it. So I'm like, oh, who cares? And I want to just be like, you don't believe what happens later. But.
Well, it's like we have to do the whole, like, Russo Brothers thing from, like, an Infinity War and Endgame, where it's just like, well, I guess we'll just wait and see what happens, you know? Be very cryptic and stuff.
We don't know what the name is. It could be Endgame. Remember that for so long? They were like, who knows what the title is? And everyone's like, it's Endgame. We know it. And they're like, no, who knows? And then they put out that photo with, like, the props in the background, and it spells Endgame. And they're like, oh, still, we don't know. We should do that.
I mean, he just said that in the movie. It wasn't important.
We should hire him. We should have, like, a photo of us with props behind us that spell out, like, false information. That'd be good.
Specifically. And then when we come up with the comic book turns out exactly how we, like, presented it.
Yeah,
like, no surprises.
So, before we get into Tim's final question and kind of where we can find you guys, again, we have very little professionalism or prep. So, in my 9-to-5 job, I somehow have to like interview and hire people, which I have no fucking idea how to do that. And, I would just like anytime I do one, I have to have people sit in with me because I would just hire everybody. I'm like, oh, that's nice. That's awesome. Like, I'm really terrible at it.
You got it. You got the job.
So I've been looking up interview questions, and I was like, which again is weird because, like, that's majority of what I do on the internet is interview. Yeah. So I was going to ask you, like, two or three of these hard-hitting interview questions.
Whew.
All right.
Here we go.
What critical feedback do you most often receive?
Oh, that's a good one.
It's similar to what is your greatest weakness, but it's apparently supposed to pull out more from the... And I don't ask these. I don't fucking care what people say.
Hiram, do you want to start?
What's the most critical one?
Hiram, I critique you nonstop, dude.
Do what? What'd you say?
I critique you so much. You got to use some of that juicy critiques I give you.
Like,
I'm just kidding.
Am I going to critique you? Critiquing Jake's work.
Yourself.
Oh, myself. I guess, like, look out for the details. I'm not as detail oriented. I like to see the bigger picture of things. To notice the details and to not get sidetracked. And I think that's kind of like the criticism I'll give myself as far as, like, what I do in regards to contributing to Blood Force Trauma, being consistent.
That's good. Yeah, no, that's a good one. I think focused is too, because Hiram's always like, he's always working on something and his head's over here. So, like, him being focused is a thing. Like, that's the only thing. It's like, I've got to be like, Hiram, this is the time. We're writing at this time. And then when we're there, Hiram's like, idea, 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 idea. And it's awesome. But, you know, Hiram's always like, Hiram's got like a dry erase board with like 19 ideas he's like cooking up at the same time. So, like, yeah, I would agree, Hiram, focus is a thing. You gotta, like,
it's a really big thing, like, cause, like, you know, on account of my ADD, that shit gets in the way of a lot of productivity.
And then, but all your ideas are great, you know, you just gotta, like, and this is for everyone, you know, like, it is hard to focus on one thing at a time because you're in the back of your mind, you're thinking about that great other thing that you could be doing, and it makes it's like the grass is always greener or whatever. The thing you're doing right now is like, it's not as good as that thing. And then if you're working on the other thing, you're thinking about the first one. For me, I critique myself the hardest. People, like, I don't know what people say about my art. It's almost like anything they've critiqued, I already know because I notice it first because I'm making it. But there's certain things that I want to be better at drawing. Like, I'm trying to, like, put more vehicles in the next issue because I don't draw a lot of cars and stuff. But there's nothing like in a city setting, like, selling that people live in this city, like, cars parked everywhere. So, like, in this comic, I'm trying to go all out and figure out things that I'm not comfortable drawing and putting it in there. So, like, things like that, and I don't know.
You just see, like, a random horse pop up.
Dude, a horse, yeah, or a bicycle, or something horrible. that I don't want to draw. Yeah, dude, we're gonna have a whole fighter who's bicycle horse themed, and he's gonna throw horses at people, and it's gonna be be the worst thing to draw.
That's gonna be amazing, actually.
How do you handle stress?
For me personally, I try to separate from it, like, temporarily. Like, I go out on walks.
Hiram walks a lot, yeah.
Yeah, I go out on several walks, just, like, to kind of, like, recenter everything, then I go right back into it.
That's when we were roommates, I would, like, drive to go get food or something, and on my way back, I'd be, like, a mile or two down the road from our apartment, and I would see Hiram, like, dancing to his music, and be like, Hiram's, like, a mile. Like, I'd be like, dude, you walk so far. yeah, Hiram walks. Me, it's like I set myself little it's like I do little cheats to help myself. So, like, if I'm drawing a page, I know that the hardest thing the next day that stresses me out and keeps me from working is having a blank page, like waking up and it's completely blank and I gotta start. So what I do is at the end of the page I did, I'll just loosely start roughing in the next page. Like, I don't even have to do details, just to, like, put something in for myself the next morning. And then I wake up and I just feel a little bit better. Like, oh, this page has already started, so it won't take that long. So, like, setting up little cheats for yourself and, you know, that helps me, at least with the stresses of doing comics. But there's a whole other list of things to help me with the stress of real life.
Yeah, it's kind of like an open-ended question. Is, like, the stress of doing our work, like, as far as art, or the stresses of just, like, everyday life?
I just drink myself stupid. I'll be honest.
Yeah, I don't know what you guys are talking about as I play with my Hasbro Megazord. Just buy things to make me happy.
I wake up in a sweat and I just grab my Megazord and I just rub it for good luck.
Yeah. You love me, Megazord. This is my last one.
So my interview question.
Oh, go ahead, Tim. Tim, you don't hire people. Okay.
Tim.
Did we lose Tim? Did I fire him?
You verbally fired him. You shut him down too hard.
Oh, there he is. Awesome.
Oh shit, the hard hitting ones.
Man, that's I have to think about that one.
I don't know. Pass.
let's see. It's like, if, like, for me it's like a mixture of snickerdoodle and, well, actually no, that's about it.
A mixture of just that and not
a mixture of just snickerdoodle.
A mixture of several batches of snickerdoodle.
I would be definitely chocolate, double chocolate macadamia nut, and I don't know if I'd be that. That's just what I want.
Do you count like macaroons as a cookie? You know?
Oh yeah, come on, you got to.
Okay, that's, well, then cookie. All right, like a snickerdoodle, like macaroon type thing.
I think a good answer is you'd say a half-baked cookie, because you're already delicious, but you have room to grow if someone were to bake you.
Exactly. Damn, you are an interviewer. You're good.
I know, yeah. We should be interviewing you. You have, like, these, like, these, like, really deep ways of, like, looking at cookies that I never thought of. They're awesome.
Well, this is the last one. I've asked it once, because we have, like, some stupid thing, I don't know, this they give us, like HR gives us, and I just lie and say it's on the sheet. I'm like, oh, I gotta ask this question, it's stupid. But I found it on Indeed. It's, how many pennies, if stacked to the top of each other, would equal the height of the Empire State Building?
It's a real question on the thing.
Yeah, it's supposed to examines people's thought process, and the second I asked it, I just, like, zoned out because I was on Zoom. I was just like,
yeah.
I was going to read a comic.
1,000 pennies. Sorry.
That's it?
1,002 pennies.
It's like Price is Right rules. I'm just going to go one above you or one under you.
Yeah, that would be the right answer. It'd be like $1. Oh, fuck.
At least I didn't go over.
This person knows how to play.
It's, like, crazy, because, like, 1,000 pennies to me sounds like it would not be anywhere close to tall enough.
Oh, not at all. It's barely.
Like, I'm like, oh, no way. It's got to be, like, 1,000,000, right? I don't know. I'm like that guy.
If somebody asked me that question, I would just like, I would stop the interview and be like, hold on, let's figure this out. Yeah. And I would not be able to like go forward.
Yeah, I mean, technically, I don't think like $10 worth of pennies going to like reach up to the Empire.
$10. If you do it in dollar amounts, I guess that would probably help me more. Like, I feel like $10,000 of pennies would probably.
Sorry, specifically $10.02.
No, yeah, specifically that it's that 2 cents that really makes the difference.
Is it the 2 cents that really that would tip the scales? But that's my 2 cents. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Now that we've asked terrible questions, I'll let Tim ask his final question.
All right, so this question's for both of you. Gun to your heads.
Tim is fine.
I'm ready, Tim.
One episode of The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, there's.
Wait, am I here?
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Yeah, you're here. I hear you.
So, yeah, gun to your head, if you had to write one episode of The Big Bang Theory, what would happen?
I'd let them shoot me.
It's the first time we've gotten that answer.
I'd be like, well, just end it now. Just kidding. I don't know.
Hiram, big hero moment for the world.
If I had to write an episode of The Big Bang Theory,
Hiram, I guess you could probably save that show. Wait, do we like this show? Do you guys like Big Bang Theory?
I've never watched.
We know so
a full
little
episode
about
of The
it.
Big Bang Theory.
Oh, okay. I remember my little brother was so into it, and now if I bring it up, he's like, don't even bring up, I used to love that show. And I'd be like, he'd be like, I hate it now. And I'm like, oh, okay. Hiram, well, it's just about the four nerds and the one hot girl. So, Hiram, run with that. What do they do?
What do they do?
You're the writer.
They go to an escape room, right?
I love that.
One of the nerds who's probably afraid of touching any woman is like stuck in there with a porn star.
That really wants to, you know.
But like he doesn't want to do anything with her because he's too nervous.
Yeah. Yeah. You know?
And then the rest of the nerd friends, including that girl, try to help them escape. But she's like a nymphomaniac. She really wants to sex him completely, but he just can't do it because he's too nervous.
So this episode of The Big Bang Theory is just the porn version of The Big Bang Theory. I like that.
But he doesn't want to do it, you know? So it's not really porn, you know?
Yeah, but you don't even have to change the name of the show. It makes sense.
That's the only thing I thought about up
the
top.
The porn title of The Big Bang Theory is still The Big Bang Theory. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, even if it was porn, it will still be The Big Bang Theory.
The Big Bang Theory.
I'm sure that'd be porn for somebody anyway.
Yeah, someone would like that.
Yeah, like, I'm really into watching people be harassed by porn stars and not get into it,
and nothing comes out of it. Yeah. I love that.
I mean, it's like edging, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, it's like almost, and then it ends, and you're like, "What? That's so good."
I want to get my fix.
Yeah. Just zooms into his face. He says, "Well, maybe," and then the episode ends.
That's good.
So, if people wanted to find the Kickstarter or any of you guys' stuff, what would be the easiest way? And obviously, if you're listening, we've posted all the links and everything. But just if people wanted to find something,
So the Kickstarter is at bftcomic.com, and then. And go there, look at all this stuff if you are interested. There's a lot of sweet goodies that we've got. Follow my Instagram is dead_gremlin_comics. And then Hiram.
Oh, mine. My Instagram is hiram.png.
Ah, and then my Twitter is jakesmithart and Hiram's.
Yeah, mine is Hiram in 4D.
Oh yeah, you changed it. I'm glad that we did this podcast after Hiram changed all of his handles, because it used to be like Hirigity, and I could never spell it. You've told me.
It's a very complicated spelling, which is why I just opted to like change it.
And then mine used to be like my Xbox Live name, and then I changed it because I was like, no, we got to be professional now.
Aren't you guys like embarrassed of like your old Yahoo, oh, yeah. Hotmail, like Xbox yeah. Live? Where, like yeah, my Xbox AOL Live / YouTube channel was like Jeet Kune Do 95 or something.
Yeah, don't be embarrassed. Well, that's awesome.
I had I don't remember. Oh, it was my college email. Was like, it was your like initials and a bunch of numbers, and then yeah. I was too lazy. I'm like, I don't want to come up with a whole fucking rigmarole to figure this shit out. So when I made a Gmail account, I just used that at Gmail, so I didn't have to learn anything new. But now I always feel like when I'm emailing people, it looks like it's weird fucking like Russian bot account. It's just like initials, and I was like, I gotta change this. But it's been like 10 years. I don't know how to do that.
You're stuck with it now.
Yeah, I'm stuck with it. But Tim, where can they find you? What do you do, Tim?
Well, if you're trying to find me on AOL Instant Messenger about 15 years ago, my username was couchpotato42790.
That's good.
I love that.
But nowadays, I write over at Comics Pit, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Tim Madura.
Nice. Couch Man. Potato is a good name for is a good Twitter handle.
Man, I was mine really was like into super TV. Sceney. My I had like I see my breath. So I was like, it's like when you can like see words and I mean that fucking hardcore band. Yeah. Man. Tim, what are we? I don't know where we're at, Tim. We're at pages underscore panels. I think the only thing, when you're listening to this, we will have picked the winner for our comic book club, I don't know, book club comic-y thing we're going to do live in September. We got to figure out how to live stream it. But I will insert the winner of the book here, and we will be talking about that book. So you won't hear what I just said. I'll have inserted that. But
like with a robot voice?
Yeah. I'm going to do...
like Jim Hansen or whatever.
I'll see if I can find a... I wonder if... yeah, I could probably find like all the words in Big Bang Theory and cut it up.
Oh my god.
I love... the greatest thing I ever found was using the Bazinga sound effects. Just cutting it and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, we're going to be doing a live stream of a book club. I am so... we will have a winner. We're going to be about 3 weeks or so to read the book, and then we're going to do a live stream about us talking about the book, and then people can join us, their thoughts on it.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I think that's about it. Again, it's a comic book podcast. You didn't stumble upon us. I'm sure you know how to find us. Someday, some like 80-year-old lady is going to like email and be like, I just found your podcast.
You didn't give any your info. Stumbled on this episode, and they were like, what? There's no George Lopez? I'm so mad you guys aren't talking about George Lopez. Hiram, you missed their opening. They said they were a George Lopez podcast, and I got super excited, and they tricked everyone.
Oh, man, I was hoping to hear that Low Rider song.
That song.
Yeah, this is like the, 1 o'clock nightmare of every kid or teenager.
Nick at Night's on, and they're like, oh, Low Right.
It's like one of those shows like where I think most people have seen almost every episode and they don't know how. I've seen every episode and I'm not sure.
Oh no, how. It was always on. Like I'd stay up too late and it would be on, and then I remember it was like I would go to, there was some, like I think I did like a judo or like a karate class or something, and it would be on in the place where I did it, and I'd walk in after every night and it would be on and I'd watch it, and it was very weird. I don't know
why. That's a really weird, like I feel like we all have really weird ways of just like happening upon George Lopez show, because like I turn on Nick at Night at like 11 p.m. or like 3 a.m. I'm like, this isn't Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and I just watch it anyway.
It's a hypnotic show. I think it's the Low Rider. It gets you in with that trampoline opening.
It does. And then when you realize, is this like George Lopez show, or is this Disney Channel original movie?
Oh, dude, those were the days. And then you watch it, and you realize Ron Swanson was on it, and you're like, what?
Oh, I know. Well, because as part of the joke is like me reading through a synopsis of an episode, everyone, and then every single time I read through it, I'm like, oh, I remember this episode.
You always are like, oh, yeah. The one I always remember is when the kid Max, or I think his name was, and he wets the bed, and that's a whole big thing. Do you remember that one?
Yes. Yeah. The more I read through this synopsis, I'm like, this was a terrible family.
This was a terrible
George Lopez, you failed us. But anyway, the most important thing is, if you're listening to this, again, go back it. It's fully funded, so you're going to get the book. But the important thing is, yeah, again, to keep backing it, to get it, but to kind of show, because, like, it's, I mean, again, we have people on for things we like, because, again, it'd be a weird podcast if it was a book we didn't like and we were interviewing people.
Yeah.
It'd be super awkward, but I love this book. A huge fan of this Offbeat Town. I think that's an amazing book as well.
Oh, thank you.
Which, again, I mean, I know that's, like, the like, thing of looking back on your work, but, like, hearing you talk about, like, you figuring out things on this Offbeat Town. I'm like, this book looks... I'm looking at it now. I'm like, this thing looks fucking amazing. Where she, like, busts out of that thing in issue 4.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'm excited for more of this stuff. So that's the most important to go back in. We really appreciate you guys taking the time to come on.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Thank you for dealing with our technical difficulties.
Yeah, thank you for powering
through. No problem.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Yeah, it makes up for the like three or four times like a couple months ago where we lost episodes because I forgot to record. So.
Oh dang! I hate that.
But yeah, again, that's this episode of Pages and Panels, and next time I promise we'll get to George Lopez.